This episode of the Ottawa Entrepreneurs Podcast is brought to you by Extension Marketing, the marketing agency that specializes in unique needs and budgets of small to medium-sized businesses. They provide turnkey marketing solutions that get results. You can find out more today at extmarketing.ca. Now here's your host, Pat Whalen.
In this episode of Ottawa Entrepreneurs, I spend time with Ed Hansen. Ed owns Hansen Lawn & Garden, a company he started over 20 years ago as a one-man show and has since grown it into one of the leaders in his industry. I think you'll find his experience, comments, unique and insightful. I hope you enjoy the show. So welcome to the show, Ed. Thanks for taking the time to speak with us today.
Not a problem. Happy to do so.
For our listeners that may not have heard of Hansen Lawn & Garden and may not be familiar with what you do, can you tell us a little bit about the company, Ed?
Certainly. So I started the company back in the late 80s, and it's a design, build, maintain in the sort of landscape spectrum of services. And you know, our primary goal is to make sure that we can help everybody with their outdoors of their homes from start to finish.
And late 80s, first of all, congratulations. It's a long time to be in business. Obviously, you know, it's quite a success story. How did you decide to get into business for yourself in the first place?
Well, that's a tough one because the long, short answer is I basically started working in the industry for another company. And, you know, as time went on, I don't think when I started, it wasn't really what I thought I was going to be doing, but, you know, did it, fell in love with it, fell in love with what I could do at the time for clients and what I thought we could do for people in general. And I also loved the fact of transformation. I liked the fact that we could go in and make a difference for people. And then here we are 27, 28 years later.
And did you start off just by yourself, Ed, kind of going door to door? Maybe you can take our listeners through how things started out for you.
When I first branched out on my own on a maintenance side, I originally thought I would just do, you know, I'll say the construction side. And unfortunately, wasn't enough work to keep someone busy. So I was doing some maintenance. And my first 13 clients that I had were 100% from a few clients that were neighbors. And then also people who literally I was knocking on doors. I walked around neighborhoods, handed out flyers, you know, did the classic guerrilla marketing, even though then I didn't know that that's what it was called, and went and knocked on the doors and, hi, my name is Ed, and this is what I'd like to do for you. If you need me for any services, let me know. And you know what's really interesting is those 13 clients stuck with me in most cases. And as funny as it is, I still, 20-some years later, have 5 or 6 of them left.
Wow, that's amazing. It sounds like every entrepreneur's kind of startup story, you know, going door to door or picking up the phone. But to maintain those clients that length of time, that must say a lot of, you know, about the good service that you and your team do. So you started off, you know, kind of on your own. And now how, in terms of number of employees, how big are you guys now?
Well, being a seasonal company, we fluctuate. So sort of at our peaks in the season, we can have as many as 35. And then at other parts of the season, it depends on what we're going through. But generally anywhere from 20 to 35.
That's great. And so, you know, a long time in business, has there been any significant changes you've seen within your industry category since you started?
Oh my gosh, yeah. And in all sorts of different avenues. In one definite case, we would see one just from the economies of scale. When we first started, or when I first started in the industry, realistically, it was only the affluent that would take the service. So people who could afford it, because I think back then it would have seemed that you were a lesser person if you couldn't do those sorts of things.
Right.
However, as time has gone on, what's happened is the pendulum's gone the complete other way. And now it's, what can you do with your time to benefit your family and yourself? So would you rather go golfing on the weekend or cut your grass? Would you rather spend every single weekend you have all summer installing a patio? Would you rather a professional do it? So I think that is definitely one massive change. I think the other is, you know, building off of that would be that back then, I'm sure anybody whose, you know, parents were born in the 30s or 40s, they would never have hired somebody to do something that would have ever,
right,
you know, looked after something like that, that you could quote unquote do yourself. And I think that's completely gone now because, you know, both parents are working. People would rather spend time, you know, on, you know, sort of producing and making a better family in their minds, maybe. So, you know, the service is more wide open. And there's a lot. And the other major thing is when I first started, there were very few companies. Now, I would say, you know, in Ottawa alone, there's 200 member companies with Landscape Ontario. And then there's probably another 1,000 companies that maybe call themselves landscape companies or are just not members of associations. That's all. So a lot of people are in the game, so to speak.
It's interesting you mentioned the change of generation. I can picture within my own family, you know, there's no way my father would have paid for a service like that, whereas even some of my older siblings probably wouldn't. But as we kind of move, you know, into the younger generation, yeah, we're more than willing to pay for it to free up our time. It's interesting. So is that kind of tie into the popularity of shows on HGTV? You know, how has that affected your industry? I mean, think of that, you know, 10, 15 years ago, there was no shows specializing in how to take care of your home or ways to improve your home or increase the value of your home. Has that had a positive effect on your industry?
I'm going to say it's a double-edged sword. I think that when you have, on the one side, the positive side, I think what's happened is people don't just look at their real estate as being something that they live in. Now they look at it as an investment. So back in the, you know, say 60s, 70s, 80s, early 80s, people, they lived in homes. That's where they grew up with their families. They bought that house. They lived in it until the day they died. And, you know, it was really just, everything was simple. You know, you would have done things on the grass. You didn't have a patio. Everything was pure, raw, simple functionality. But now if your neighbor all of a sudden put a patio in and it looks better and now their value of their home went up, well, people started looking at it and saying, oh my gosh, maybe I should start to do that as well. Pick up, you know, right away, make sure to pick up on what the neighbors were doing. And then I think that that part has gone right off the chart. Now everybody realizes that the norm isn't just my standard box of a home. Now it's my standard box of a home. Where do I live? How much can I invest in this home and still get a return on my investment? And we see that now constantly. People will take a design that we do. They'll look at it. They'll look at the project's value at, say, $20,000. And then they'll say, okay, well, my house is worth X. Does that add to my value of my home? 9 times out of 10, the answer is yes, especially depending on what neighborhoods they live in. So that's been huge. I think that's the number one on that side. I think on the negative, though, is that some of those shows have a little bit of a challenge in the sense that if I'm watching a show that's in Vancouver and I have a great idea from there, sometimes it just doesn't work in Ottawa's environment. So we have to be careful that, you know, somebody might not like plant material from Vancouver. Well, it's a different zone. We can't plant those plants here. Right. So different things are in different areas. I think in the United States, for an example, which where the majority of the home and garden shows are, you know, their houses, let's say in the South, they don't have foundations. They are just on built on pillars. So, you know, when somebody's looking, oh, well, they did that for, you know, $50 or $100. It's just, it's different here because we have frost. We also have a bit different in terms of sort of accreditation of professionals and of red sealed trades. So it's a bit different that way too. But that being said, I think it's, you know, you could lead that into helping your clients be educated a bit more, and you can make sure that they're aware of ideas and what different trades can do and the benefits of all of these. It also gets everybody's inspirational juices flowing. So they're able to look at things and, you know, oh my gosh, that looks great. I'd love to have that in my backyard. So from that perspective, it's really good.
Is there ever an issue where, you know, someone sees a show like that and assumes that these things happen a lot faster than they actually do?
Well, sure, you can time lapse a 30-day installation into a half an hour show. So, you know, you could think that maybe we're going to come and do that in 1 week. Maybe. I think the other ones, like some of the challenge shows where, you know, a contractor's come in and done a bad job and then another contractor comes in with his cape on and saves the day. The challenge with those too is that, you know, we don't actually see the original part of it. So we don't see what the customer, when they were making that initial decision, what they were looking at. So let's say they had three prices to begin with, but they took the cheapest guy or they took the one who wasn't part of any associations or wasn't part of any professional accreditations. So they were, you know, how did they pick? It's like that would almost be a TV show in itself, you know, and that kind of has been interesting. That's the biggest one because they see the next guy come in. Well, okay, you've already spent $100,000 on this job. Well, the next guy came in, he still spent money to fix that job. So how much did the project cost in total? I think there's cost is the biggest one. People just don't necessarily have a grasp of the costs of those projects. More so than the timelines.
It's funny you say that, because when I watch shows like An Income Property, you know, they talk a lot about the upfront investment, but what they don't really spell out for the viewer is, okay, the cost of paying back that loan. They just look at it as a hard cost. Okay, $30,000 to renovate your basement or your backyard, and you're going to get a return of X. They don't really take into account the interest rates, which I find interesting. But maybe that's an idea for another show altogether, is a bit deep on the financial side of things.
I was just going to say, on that same note, you're totally right. The other is how to get that money. So, right. So great, your investment to this is to put in $50,000. Well, that's excellent, but how did they get that $50,000? It's, those are interesting tidbits. But like you say, probably a whole show in itself.
For sure. Well, at least we know we'd have two viewers anyway, you and I.
For sure.
What are some of the changes you see coming in the next sort of 3 to 5 years in your industry category?
Well, I would say number one that's happened over the last few years is we're starting to see, obviously, the transparency of everything. So when a customer might call you, whereas when I first started, you could go to a store and purchase products at a, let's say, quote unquote, contractor rate. Now homeowners get those same deals. So you got to be transparent with your pricing, and people really want to see, how you break things down. That's one. Sometimes cost, whereas we always used to look at things and say, the cheapest guy was the worst guy. I'm not sure that's the case anymore. I think sometimes the guy with the least expensive bid, sometimes it's because of their process. Maybe they have a better process than other people and they can actually install faster or provide a service quicker. I think you're also probably going to see lots of legislation stuff coming in the next few years with our industry in particular. Everything from, workers' compensation, the looking into having overtime as being something added in, and all of those things in the end have to come back to cost and who bears the cost, whether it's the company or whether it be the end user. I think it's great that in the industry we've got schools, Algonquin College and some of the other colleges, they have programs for, graduate programs that have students come out with, technician certifications, which is great. They're still in apprenticeship programs as well. So be interesting to see how those go in the next few years. And I think everybody's falling in love with entrepreneurship. It's just a challenge of whether or not, you can sustain entrepreneurship to become an actual corporate entity and protect yourself and your family, I guess. But lots of stuff, I'm sure, in the next 5 years, for sure.
That leads nicely into our next line of questioning. As you know, Ed, this is a show that, that our listener base is made up of entrepreneurs and, entrepreneurs in waiting, shall we say. So as an entrepreneur yourself, you've got to wear many hats. How do you go about prioritizing your day?
That would be a day-to-day decision. And the reason I say that is, if you think of yourself as take an analogy of, a sports coach, you go into each day and, in a perfect world, your starting players would be your starting players. But, maybe today you show up and one of your players is injured, something's happened to change the whole thing. So I think every day the general consensus for me when I start the day is to focus on what the priorities of the day are. So for a project starting, that's a priority. We want to make sure that the staff that are going to be looking after that have everything they need and make sure that the client's aware of what's happening and how that goes. As an entrepreneur or a business owner, you also have to make sure that you aren't the person stopping anybody in your workplace from doing their job. So if they need information from you to continue what they're doing and to be productive, then you'd make sure they have that information. Because if not, if you have staff that have to sit around and they're being paid or you're allocating their money to a project, if they're standing around doing nothing and it's your fault, that has to slide up in the priority scale. Obviously, customers slide very high in the priority scale. They need information from you or estimates or require a little bit more information on something you've provided them. But it's a basic, prioritization each day. And sometimes certain things slide up the scale and other days some things slide down the scale. And obviously, depending on the time of year or the time of month, you can have different things that slide up, whether it be accounts receivable or accounts payable, whether it's every quarter, making sure your HST information is all put together. So different times of the year. But I think basically it's a day-to-day. You come in and you start off thinking, okay, what's important today? What do I have to focus on? If you're really prepared, you start focusing on the night before so that you kind of have an idea, okay, tomorrow when I get in, what speed is the treadmill at before you hop on it?
You mentioned something interesting about, not getting in an employee's way. I think it's almost a natural personality trait that entrepreneurs have to a certain extent that they want to not control everything, but be on top of everything, shall we say. So is that something that you would advise, you know, people out there, business owners, that hey, you got to be aware of that you may have a tendency to do that? You may not even be aware you're doing it.
Oh, I think you hit on a topic that is certainly a big discussion for sure. I think that for those of us that have probably, I know you know this well as well, but the e-myth, for an example, is a great lead-in, right? All of us who start businesses, if you started it because you have a passion for something, for example, in my case, I started out with a passion to do what I do for the clients. As time goes on, though, you have to start to realize that certain people are better at things than you are currently. It doesn't mean that you weren't better than them before, if that's a mental block you have to get around. But I think that, you know, for an example, I'm not an accountant. So I would make sure that, you know, our company's accountant, he looks after anything to do with that. I can have financial statement knowledge and I can, you know, understand how to read things, but it doesn't make me be an accountant. So I would leave those sorts of things. You know, when I was on a crew, when I first started, we did not have, you know, specific saws, or we didn't have skid steers, or we didn't have equipment to make us go faster on the jobs. We had, you know, imagine traditional things like shovels and rakes, right? So I thought it was really good. But, you know, if I was to get there, I would openly admit that some of our staff is dramatically better at me in what they do. But letting go of that was a challenge. There is no question. You have to have faith in your staff. And then as your business grows, at least in my business anyway, you know, my office was the same way. I would look at it like, you know, I was the only person that could sell something, or I was the only person that could administer something. But in reality, those aren't my strengths. And I think laying them out and saying, okay, what is this person's strength? And that was number one. It was actually my dad. I remember sitting down with my dad and him saying, okay, look, what are you good at? What do you need help with? And that was the biggest one where I started to say, okay, yeah, wow, I'm not really good at that. And I need to get somebody who is good at that. So instead of hiring people who just do what you do, hire people that are good at what you can't do or you're not good at, and vice versa for them. If they don't have faith that you do well what you say you do well. I read a book a little recently about a Navy SEAL team and some of the interesting things that they look at in terms of their team concept. And that every single person has to do their job. And you have to have faith that they're going to do their job. And they have to have faith in you that you're going to do your job. So in terms of everybody knowing what they do, yeah, I think that in a nutshell, I guess, is, you know, to summarize, you got to have faith in the people that do what they do. And I know for me here, I have really, really good high quality staff. And that's how they last. They last because they're very good at what they do. And I don't have to worry about the micromanagement of what they do. I mean, we have to, as a team, discuss the overall direction and things like that. But the last thing I would want to do is over-focus on somebody and quote-unquote babysit them.
It's tough to admit, though, isn't it? That, you know, things, you're trying to analyze yourself and your business, and you're looking at the things that you may not be good at. I don't know about you, but first of all, you're 100% correct, and that is the right approach. But I know for me personally, sometimes it's tough to admit that, you know what? Yeah, that is not my strength. Do you find the same thing?
Very tough. I mean, you think you're a superstar until you look in the mirror sometimes and realize, oh my God, this person is way better at this than I am. When that sort of quote-unquote aha moment is, when you have it and you realize, I'm not sure for me when exactly it was. Do we have time for like a silly story?
Yeah, but, yeah, for sure.
One time I had a staff member, and this was way back in my early years, and he basically would bug me all the time. He would tease me about the fact that I didn't work really hard. Like, where did I go when I left the cruise? Go, oh, where are you going for lunch? You know, and he kind of was teasing me. A good guy too, don't get me wrong. So, you know, 1 week we said, okay, you know what? Listen, I'm going to work on your crew all week and we're going to get everything done super fast. So, you know what? I stayed with them the entire time. So Monday came, we went out, we worked till 6. We worked on Tuesday, same thing. Wednesday, same thing. Wednesday, we were almost done the entire week's work by about 6 o'clock. And he says to me at the end of the day, he goes, wow, this has been a really great week. He said, so what's on for tomorrow? And I turned to him and I said, well, you guys are off for the rest of the week and the weekend. And he said, well, what do you mean? I said, well, I haven't had time to go and get you guys work for Thursday and Friday. So you guys are off. And you know what? This guy, to his credit, he looked at me and he goes, I get it. I totally understand. No, man, sorry about that. And I wasn't doing it to punish him. I was doing it because even then for me, it was an aha moment for me. Like, I thought, okay, yeah, maybe I should be helping these guys out. But then I realized if I'm doing the work, then I can't go get work. And another one too, same token for me, long time ago, hired a guy to, as a business consultant, to come in and kind of look at us and what we were doing right and what we're doing wrong. Anyway, after about 2 days of this guy and some of the questions and the chatting and so forth, I realized, you know, I basically fired him. I said, oh my God, you're crazy. I can't do half the things you're saying, and this is insane. Anyway, I never went back to the guy, but about a year later, I realized, you know, wow, this guy was so right. It's just sometimes it takes a while. It takes a while for you to see those things in front of you. And it's just whether or not you're, if you're still growing when you're having those kinds of problems, you know, it's a good thing. You know, you think of it in my industry, you plant a plant, you know, sometimes that seed, you know, grows and sometimes it doesn't. And if it grows without, you know, the proper nourishment and rainfall and fertilizing and so forth, and that's great, you've done everything perfect. Sometimes it still grows and it barely rained all summer and you didn't give it any fertilizer. Right. So it's hard to describe it, but it won't sustain itself if you don't look after it properly. And I think sometimes, you know, I'm not going to lie, it's like any sports, you know, you've got to have a little bit of luck sometimes on your hand, even if you are still a fantastic player. You still need to have a little bit of luck here and there, whether it's, you know, picking up a fumble or a ball goes foul or something, you know, it's got to be something.
Mm-hmm. For, you know, the listeners out there, Ed, that are thinking of starting a business, obviously after, you know, 25 plus years of having your own, I'm sure there's lots of information, lots of advice you'd give them. But if you had to, you know, kind of pinpoint it down to one or two sort of key pieces of advice, what would those be?
So, you know, that's a question I hear a lot. In the last few years, I've, you know, gone in and spoken at Algonquin on a similar topic. And, you know, I've come to the conclusion that number one, hands down, has to be do not do anything specifically just to make money. If that's the only reason you're going to do it, you will fail. So if I buy a company because I think I'm going to make a lot of money at it, or I start a company, oh, this is great, I can sell widgets and I'm going to make $20,000 every day and so on and so forth, eventually you're going to fail at it because you don't really like it. You know, and I'm going to almost paraphrase some of the, you know, I think it starts with why. And, you know, you look at your Steve Jobs, you look at your super successful guys in life or perceived for success based on money and so forth. But I'm not really sure how much those guys sat and thought about how much money they were making. They just did something that they were so passionate about that it's not a job. If it's a job, you're going to hate it. If you hate it, then you're not going to be successful at it. And you're not going to be successful at it, then why do it in the first place? So, you know, that goes back to enjoy what you're doing. If you're doing it, you know, like if you're an artist and you think you're really good at it, well, sometimes, you know, I met a guy one time who was a painter and I didn't know that he was an artist as well, but he used painting as his avenue to kind of decorate people's places. And it was his sort of way to do that. But while he was still painting at home to, you know, because he said, I can't sell enough paintings to pay for what I like to do. So there's got to be a balance, but you know, the work-life balance is a lot easier if your work is something you're passionate about, and then you don't worry so much about how much time you're spending on, you know, oh my God, I'm still at work. Well, I'm not still at work if I actually enjoy it and if I can call people and do things to enjoy it. But that's number one, I guess, then in a summary would be better like what you're doing and don't just do it for the money, because if you're only doing it for the money, you're going to have a hard, hard sled in those first, you know, when I started, I remember everybody said, you know, you got to have 5 years before you start to see some benefits. I still think that's probably pretty true. And not every year's a good year too. So you got to be able to ride the waves. So in a nutshell, I think, you know, enjoy what you're doing and don't just do it for the money. It'll be easier on you.
I think that's probably another shift that we've seen in entrepreneurship in the last, say, 25, 30 years. I would argue that, you know, 25, 30 years ago, people may have got into business, money being the sole or at least the primary reason. But I've seen firsthand a shift probably at least in the last decade where people, it's more about, hey, listen, you know, find a passion, do it well, and the money will come as long as you're servicing your clients and your employees properly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think you're bang on. But if you think about a traditional sense, and if you look at sort of the Ottawa area, you know, what did we do? You went to high school. When you were done high school, you went to university. When you were done university, you got a job as a teacher, as a lawyer, as a doctor, as a government employee. And then you signed up to work in the government. You worked there from the time you start your career until the time you finished your career. Even if you hated it at the 15, 20 year mark, you'd still do it because the golden handcuffs were on you and you'd do it. I see now people are breaking away from that. Like, they don't want to just do something because their parents did it or because that's the way you're supposed to do it. So some people might look at a millennial as being, you know, somebody, they want to start at the top. Well, maybe that's true. But, you know, if that's such a bad thing, I don't think it is. I think that they're able to look at something and say, you know what, I could do this. And I really have a passion for computers, or I have a passion for, imagine if all the people who like playing video games didn't have a passion to build them, there'd be no video game industry. And I think now there's, you know, it's a gazillion-dollar industry because these guys love doing it and they've been successful at it. It's no different than somebody who, you know, loved, you know, going out for a sail and then all of a sudden decided to build sailboats because they love it. So, you know, it's just different things, and we get hung up and we get, you know, just because it's not the way we did things or our parents did things, it's okay to break the chains and do it a different way.
So we're almost at the end of our time here, Ed. Last real key question for you. I know you and I share a love of reading, in particular when it comes to helping to improve our businesses. If you had to pick one or two books you'd recommend for any business owner out there, is there one or two that jump to mind?
One or two. That's going to be the tough part. I would probably say that I think that number one, I would say starts with Why. I think that's a great book. I think it really helps people, you know, and don't look at it just about Coca-Cola and Apple and, you know, so forth. It's more look at it like, why the heck are you doing what you do? And if you read that book with that intent, I think that's a great book. I think that if you go back, and also if you're somebody who's like, if you're an electrician or a plumber or a tradesperson or somebody who's very good at something and you just automatically think you can run a business, then go grab some Michael Gerber books and start reading E-Myth and, you know, go from there, and you'll start to realize that it isn't just about, you know, being good at what you do. You need others around you. I mean, it's an old book, but recommended to me by a mentor that I had when I first started, and that was Power of Positive Thinking by Dr. Norman Vincent Peale, I think, is, if
correct.
I'm not wrong.
Yeah, that's,
I think
it. It's right. Yeah, correct.
And you know what? It's very heavily based in religion and Christianity, but I don't think you have to read it with that intent. I think if you read it, just, you know, like, you can have a horrible day, but if you learn something from it, and if there was a development opportunity that you could take from it, then wake up tomorrow and get ready to go again. And that's kind of, you know, what I took from that book. And I'm, you know, you kind of go back to it every once in a while. The other one is, when you do find a good book that you like, put it away. 3 years, go back and read the thing again, and you'll be shocked how much you have actually took from it and actually put into your business again. I read, I think actually we even discussed this before, but the, it starts with Why. I read it, you know, I don't know, maybe 3 or 4 years ago. And I just recently read it again this summer. And yeah, I was shocked at what I'd learned. And I also think in the end, as a sort of a general category, pick other people that you think are successful or have had great stories of success in their life. And if you read them and read, you know, maybe you learned about why they did something, not just sort of what the end results were. And you can learn a lot from those guys in terms of biographies. And you know what? Maybe you're not a lawyer, or maybe you're not a, you know, an owner of a sports team or something. But if you read it, you might pick up on some of the things of what was successful for them, or even, you know, a daily routine that they did. And you say, you know what, that's a great idea. And you pick up on it. But yeah, the book topic, again, that's probably a whole other show too, I'm sure.
But it's funny you say that. I do tend to reread, there's probably about 10 or 12 that I reread on a regular basis. And it amazes me, you know, sometimes in the third or fourth reading, I realize, how did I not see this before? You know, how did this not register with me before? But it probably registered at the time, but it wasn't important at the time. Whereas, you know, 3 or 4 years later, things have changed to the point where now that jumps out of you, and it's now important in the stage of your life or your business.
It's the, you nailed it. It's the stage of your business. When you're reading it, you're actually probably subconsciously, you're looking for different things that are really important, or that are gaps that you're looking to solve. And then when you come back to it and reread it later on, you know, think about it as another one. When you watch, like, say Shrek is a good example. If you were a kid and you watched Shrek, you'd see it a certain way. When you're a teenager and you watch Shrek, you'd see it a totally different way. But then as an adult, we watch Shrek and laugh our brains out at certain jokes that the kids don't get.
Right, right.
And that, to me, that's the way I'd look at the book. It's the same thing. If you're in the infancy of your business, it would be a certain way. If you're in the middle range, it's, and you'll never get to the end ever. Like, it's a constant, there's no way you're not in a constant evolution. It's impossible to not be.
So Ed, where can our listeners find out more about Hanson and the services that you provide? What are the best places for them to go?
So the company itself, you know, we have an old landscaping joke that's our website, which is greensideup.com. You know, it's an old maritime joke. How do you lay the sod? You put the green side up. And on Facebook and all those, Twitter and Instagram, we're Hanson Ottawa. And, you know, for me personally, I mean, if I can sneak in some other stuff is, you know, that, you know, I'm heavily involved in our industry. And I think Landscape Ontario is a really important part of what we do. And it's a great association that allows us to be professional at what we do and have groups around us that, you know, solidify that what we're doing does make sense. There's a reason why we're professionals at what we do. And that's within, you know, we have an Ottawa chapter, but we also have a governing body at the provincial level. So that's more about the industry. And then you know what? The rest is through the company. Find out everything you need on the website and have us come for a visit.
Hey, did you want to give a quick plug to the charity work that you're involved with?
Oh, thank you for asking. I'd love to. Our company is involved in two things that we hold near and dear to our heart. Number one is a tournament that we run. It's called Take a Swing at Cancer. And over the last 12 years, we've raised close to $200,000+ now for cancer research, and it's within the Ottawa area. It's a group, myself, Dwayne Francis, Steve Lacroix, that started it. We put this together after my father passed away and raised money in that avenue. Same with the cancer theme. I really commit a lot of my time, as well as our company's time, to not only the MapleSoft Center itself and the Ottawa Regional Cancer Foundation, but also to the Cancer Survivorships Park, which also comes through Landscape Ontario, has a big part of that as well. And I'm, you know, more than proud to be a part of this. The people that work at the Cancer Center, I cannot stress how important what they do is. Every time you see them, they have smiles on their faces. They, even though things are dark, they're always looking for a way to get better, to make people's lives better. And there's where you see the power of positive thinking, because that's what these people do. They don't let the small things get them down. They keep pushing and plugging away. I gain so much inspiration by these people, even though we're the ones helping them raise money or helping them, you know, get the word out for what they do. And I gain so much inspiration by it. And the reason we do it is because of that. If it was ever a chore for me, I wouldn't do it. But I think every single one of them is spectacular people, and what they do for the Ottawa community is amazing.
Both great causes, Ed. Thanks. Ed, always a pleasure to spend time with you and talk to you. And thanks very much for doing this. I really appreciate it. Thanks for your time.
Anytime. Happy to do it. Thanks, Pat.
Thanks.